Welcome to PCMC. I'm Mike Buongiorno. I'm joined today by Anthony Buongiorno.
Hello, everyone. I'm back.
Anthony, how are you?
I'm okay.
All right.
How are you?
I'm fantastic. It's great to be alive.
Sitting here in front of your therapy light.
Mm-hmm.
It's hurting my eyes a little bit. I won't lie to you.
Yeah, but it's healing your soul.
What is it? It's not UV.
I don't know what it is.
Am I getting a sunburn right now?
No. You're just getting that sweet goodness. Today's topic: underrated 90s comedies.
Yes.
Oh boy, this was a topic that at first I was like, huh, but then when I got into it, I was like, oh, I have a lot to say about this.
Yeah, because there are a lot
to say about this. We both have five.
Yes, and I have an honorable mention as well.
I have two honorable mentions. Listen to this. One, two, three of my five are from the year 1993.
Whoa.
One is from 1991. One is from 1996, and then one of my honorable mentions is from 96, and one of my honorable mentions from 99.
Okay, so listen to this. Mine is a lot of late 90s, which is interesting because you're early 90s. My number one, the reason why I even thought of this idea, is from 1999, right on the cusp.
Whoa.
I have 96, 93, 98, 96, and my honorable mention is actually 2002.
That's
but I just was convinced that it was a 90s movie for so long that I had to include it. And come on, the early aughts is basically the 90s.
Sure. All right. Why don't you go first?
So I'm going to go, I guess I'm going to go in order. There's not really an order, but my number one is like, I feel is really unfairly underrated.
All right, go for
it. And you had asked that we also include the Rotten Tomatoes score.
Yes, lots of fun.
And I'll say out of the five, I think four are rotten.
I think all mine are rotten.
One of mine is fresh. Okay, so my first one is Kingpin.
Kingpin. Okay.
You and I saw this together.
Yes.
It's a bowling movie.
Yes.
It is Randy Quaid, Woody Harrelson.
What's it? This is rotten?
It's 50%, right on the cusp.
Wow. Okay. Because some might call this a cult
classic.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's talk about that. Because sure. I feel like the one that is my number one, a lot of people have said to me like, oh, but that's a cult classic. But I think that cult classic has been abused.
Tell me.
I feel like it's too often given, like, it's a title that's given to movies
that you remember.
You're like, oh, that's a cult classic. It's like, but to me, a cult classic like really has a cult following,
right?
Like Rocky Horror Picture Show or something,
right? There's a YouTube channel called Hats Off Media, and they have a series called Almost Cult Classics, and it's really interesting because it's like, these are things that people remember fondly, but they're not truly cult classics.
Exactly, because a cult classic, by definition, is it has a group of people that are diehard fans of it.
Right.
And I don't think any of the ones that I've selected have like diehard fans, but there may be, they may be remembered fondly, like you just said.
Yeah.
I remember them fondly.
Yeah.
And so that's why, to me, that's why they're underrated. And
right.
Because most of them were not well received and probably didn't like make a lot of money. So you and I remember, went to see this in movie theaters. I don't even know if you remember that.
I do.
When it first came out. And I just think it's hilarious and charming and stupid.
Bill
Murray is so good as the villain.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's Roy Munson is the main character, Woody Harrelson.
Yes.
And his colleague, and the villain is Ernie McCracken,
yeah,
played by Bill Murray.
And
most people know that gif of Bill Murray going like, oh, on the bowling alley, and they don't realize it's from Kingpin, which is a great movie.
Yeah, he's so good in that. Hey, why don't you finish that outside?
Yeah, it's so good. It is so funny. It holds
what
up.
What about this? Something he improvised?
Randy Quaid is crazy QAnon, but
in that
it's
he's
a great
hilarious
performance. Yeah.
When he's shitting in the You see him talking, and then at the end of this, they're in a bathroom, and then they pull out, and you see that he's sitting in a urinal shitting.
It's so good.
You know, I was actually thinking about the movie yesterday because...
It's a Farrelly Brothers joint.
Yes. I was thinking about the movie yesterday because somehow on YouTube, I saw... there's a whole, like, a bunch of videos about how to shoe a horse. And it's like, it's weird how they shoe a horse. It's not exactly what you think.
Yeah.
But then I remember that, like, he doesn't, he, like, he, first of all, he jerks off a horse at one point. Yes. Because they end up with the, he's like, no. Does he jerk? No, he jerks off a, I'm sorry. He jerks off a bull.
Yes.
Because they go to hide out with the Amish.
Yes.
And he's
That's
like, I got to
pick up Randy Quaid.
Yeah. He's like, I got up early. And milk the cow. It took a little doing, but finally she gave. And he's like, we don't have a cow.
That's a bull. That's and he's drinking it.
Yeah, of course. Well, you got to make... That was a cum joke before the...
Before something about Mary. Yeah.
So they were always with the cum jokes.
So one of its most noteworthy positive reviewers was Roger Ebert.
Nice.
He gave it 3.5 out of 4 stars.
Raj.
And Gene Siskel put it on his list of best 10 films of 1996.
It is very funny.
But it's nobody... to me, I keep thinking about, like, I was trying to think of movies that are funny and that maybe even had a moment, but, like, nobody talks about them. Nobody remembers them.
Right. You think of Dumb and Dumber. You think of Something About Mary.
And it didn't make a ton of money. It looks like it was sort of a box office failure because it cost $25 million to make. It only grossed $32 million. So, like, okay. Barely made back its
right,
budget.
Right. Munson. These kids are out here Munsons.
It's so good.
That's also a big movie for Lin Shaye as the...
Yes. Well, she's in Something About Mary.
Yes. Yes.
She's, like, I guess friends with the Farrelly Brothers? Farrelly Brothers?
No, she's in every New Line movie because her brother was the president of New Line.
Oh, that's right.
Bob Shaye.
Right, right, right. No, her husband. Isn't she Wes Craven's sister?
No, she's... No, she's not. She's the sister of Bob Shaye.
Oh, okay. 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 Okay.
All right. Good.
So
all
that's
right.
My number five.
Okay. So my number five, and this is one that actually has 63% positive on Rotten Tomatoes.
Okay.
But for some reason, this is one of those movies that was popular and people liked it. But then over time, we started to think of it as a failure.
What movie is it? What year?
93.
I bet I have the same one. What percentage on Rotten Tomatoes?
63.
I bet you we have the same exact movie.
Grumpy Old Men.
Yes. Grumpy Old Men. What a great movie.
It's got that Superman Returns thing of we now like, oh, what a failure. It's like a joke. People talk about Grumpy Old Men like it's a joke.
They tried to do The Odd Couple again and it was a failure.
It was incredible. It's really funny. It's really well acted. It's a great story. It's got sweet sentimental moments.
Yes, it's so good. And I also
it's about aging in a sweet way.
I also like Grumpier Old Men.
Yes, me too.
Yeah, I can't believe we have the same one.
It's a really good movie. And I don't know why it's not like a huge classic.
Well, you know what it is too? I think it was one of those things where it's like, they're back. Jack Lemmon and Walter Matthau are back. And oh my God, this thing's actually pretty good. And then it started a moment of like Walter Matthau and Jack Lemmon making new movies that all were horrible.
They did three more.
The Odd Couple 2 and Out to Sea, and they all sucked. So then people were like, oh, the 90s Matthau Lemmon stuff is all terrible. But Grumpy Old Men is really good.
And so is Grumpier Old Men.
Yes.
But Grumpy Old Men is better.
And I love that it's just like all old Hollywood stars talking about being old.
Yeah. Burgess Meredith is in it.
Oh my God, when he dies, that's the saddest.
Yes.
Sweetest moment.
Yeah, yeah.
But also like Anne Margaret.
He dies in the second one.
He dies in the second one. Yeah. Anne Margaret in the first one. Sophia Loren in the second one.
Yeah.
It's so good. Yeah. One of my favorite jokes from Grumpier Old Men is when she says the name of the wine. He's like, is that Italian for it tastes like your mama's feet?
Yeah.
Meredith being like a horny, dirty, perverted old man is so great.
Yeah, it's really funny. It's just genuinely
and great
very
performance
funny.
And it does have a sentimentality and it's really sweet.
And they it's really good at telling a story and setting a setting. Because it takes place in this like little fishing town. Uh-huh. Like you get to know everyone in the town, Chuck the bait guy.
Yeah.
And everything. Chuck dies in the first one.
Yes. It's super sad.
Right, right. And yeah, you get the idea of like...
What state? Is that supposed to be like Northern Michigan or something?
I'm not sure.
Let me look that up. Yeah, no, it's good. And the kids are good.
Yes. Daryl Hannah and Kevin Pollak.
Minnesota. Wabasha, Minnesota.
Yeah. Wabasha.
Wabasha, yeah. And they have like the festival.
Yeah. It's really good. Check out Grumpy Old Men. It's awesome.
It's great. Where I wonder if it's streaming anywhere. Grumpy or Old Men. Let's just out of curiosity, how was that reviewed? It made a lot of money.
Probably not as well.
But the critical response, yikes, 17% on Rotten Tomatoes.
That's, see, you look back at shit like that and it's like, what, did you have it out for them? Because it's maybe 1 degree, 2 degrees, not as good as the first one.
Yeah.
Just because it's stale a little bit?
Well,
because
it's the same story, basically.
Yeah, again. Except it's the other person falling in love.
Yeah, well, in the first one, it's, the thing is, like, they fought over a woman back in the 50s, and then now they fall in love with the same woman again.
Right.
As Old Men.
Right. Oh, it's so good. Grumpy Old Men.
And Margaret. Great. It's so her greatest performance. She's sexy as hell, man.
And she's like, what, in her 60s?
Yeah, she is really...
It's her greatest performance.
I think so, because I don't think she was much of an actress when she was young.
Hot takes.
I'm sorry.
I can't think of anything else she's in besides Tommy
Bye Bye Birdie. Yeah. I mean, there's not a lot of subtlety to those performances. No. Okay, so yeah, that's also my number four.
All right, give me... All right, so that's your number four? So is it back to me then? Or do you want to say more about that?
No, I just think it's really, really good.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. You could go next then, because that was my number four.
Okay. Also from the year of 1993, with a whopping 35% on Rotten Tomatoes, a film that had odd timing. It was about 15 years late, Coneheads.
Ooh.
Coneheads, based on a sketch from
the
SNL. 70s. Yeah, it's an SNL sketch where the sketch was about these aliens that had like coneheads. And it was basically, it'd always be like people would be coming over for a party, whatever. And no one would get that they're aliens.
And they'd say they were from France.
Right. And they'd be like obvious aliens and like talk like aliens. And it was Jane Curtin was the...
And Dan Aykroyd.
And Dan Aykroyd were the two.
Who was the daughter in the original sketches?
Oh, the...
Was it?
She's in the movie, but not as the same character.
Yeah.
Oh God. She just wrote a book too. One of the original members of SNL.
Women, right? Yeah. But not Gilda Radner.
No. Fuck. She plays the driving instructor in the movie.
Does she? Is that her?
Yeah. What's her name? She just wrote a book called May You Live in Interesting Times or something like that.
Hold on. Is it? Oh shit. Not Leslie Jones. That's way later.
It's definitely not Leslie Jones.
Well, I typed it in and it came up. Leslie Jones. Lorraine Newman?
Yes, Lorraine Newman.
I thought the driving instructor was Jan Hooks.
Oh, maybe you're right.
Who's also on SNL.
Maybe you're right. She's in there somewhere. She's in there somewhere. She might play a different role.
Yeah, okay.
But
yeah,
she's in the movie.
It was Jan Hooks.
But she wasn't the daughter.
Okay, yeah. Well, she was way too old to be the daughter.
That's also a really early movie for... Chris Farley, he plays the daughter's boyfriend.
Yes, and that daughter was in Dazed and Confused, and I remember being like, I don't recognize her without a cone head.
Cone head. Yeah, it's funny, and it actually tells a pretty... It ends up being a pretty poignant and pointed...
Immigrant story,
right? Because the bad guys are ICE agents.
Yes.
And you have the bad guys are Michael McKean... who's great and everything. From Clue to fucking the Brady Bunch movie.
Yeah.
And his little like smarmy sidekick is David Spade. And they're ICE agents. And the Coneheads have, because they're from another planet, they're illegal aliens. And he becomes obsessed with tracking them down.
Yes.
But as he's following them across the country, like they're living the American middle class dream.
I was just going to say, it is really a story about the American dream, because it treats these characters with a tenderness that I don't think anybody was expecting.
Right.
And a sentimentality and a real, like really honors their story. And it shows them like coming here and working like menial jobs and living in like a shitty little apartment, and then working their way up through promotions to get a nice house.
And originally they come to like take over the Earth, but by the end of the movie, when they get a chance to go back, they don't. They want to stay on Earth.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really
their
sweet home.
It's a great movie.
France. We are from France.
It's so fucking good.
It is really good. It's one of those movies that is way better than it has any right to be.
Right. A movie based on the sketch of Coneheads. And I think it came out in 93 and the sketch was from the early, from
like
SNL.
Yeah.
Right. So even at the time it came out, it was like, boy, this feels real late to be doing a Coneheads movie.
Right.
But it's so good.
I remember our mom taking us to see it and her loving it too.
It's fucking good. And there's basically a Rancor from Return of the Jedi at the end.
Yes.
Cause they go back to the planet and they have to like fight a Rancor, and Dave Thomas from SCTV plays the leader of their mm-hmm. planet. Check it out. It's so good. I don't know where you could find it, but it's good.
You know, you just brought up, I want to, as a sidebar, you brought up Michael McKean and the Brady Bunch movie.
Yes.
I almost included that on my list, but I truly do think that that is a cult classic.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's underrated because I do think a lot of people really now appreciate the Brady Bunch movies.
I think
when they first came out, people didn't understand that they were satirical.
Right.
But now people are just smarter or they had time to get the joke.
Yeah.
Because those movies are really funny, especially the second one.
Yeah, yeah. No, I agree with you.
Like that Sure Jan gif everybody uses all the time. Sure Jan.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. Michael McKean is just, he's just fantastic.
He's underrated.
We just saw Clue.
Clue is so good.
Talk about a movie that is way better than it deserves to be. Yeah. A movie based on a board game that's like super funny, super smart.
You know what the thing about Clue is that's interesting? A lot of people really love Clue. Do you ever listen to the podcast Movie Crush?
No.
It's like where a celebrity will come on and talk about like their favorite movie. And Casey Wilson came on and talked about Clue. It's like her all-time favorite movie. And they talk about how like Clue really presents itself as a mystery, but it's not, because it doesn't even really make sense and you can't even figure out.
Right.
Like if you go back and watch it again, it doesn't even totally make sense as a mystery, but it's just so funny.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter.
And of the three endings, there's the three endings, which there were three in the theater, but then there was when they put on VHS, they made them all.
Right.
There, but they made one different. The ending that they say is the real ending is basically Strangers on a Train, because everyone kills one person.
You mean Murder on the Orient Express?
Yes, Murder on the Orient Express.
Yeah.
Because the ending that's like, this is the real ending, everybody kills one person.
Yeah, they all killed one person.
Right, right. Whereas the non-ending endings is like Miss Scarlet and Miss Peacock.
They did that because they wanted it to be like the board game where it could have different endings. But I guess at the time people were really pissed about it.
Yeah. Oh well. Anyway, that's an episode. That's
also just love that Michael McKean, like, it just adds with him being like, I'm gonna go home and have sex with my wife.
Right, because he's this gay he's stereotype. He's
the gay
character,
the gay stereotype.
Yeah, yeah. I had to stop her from screaming. is that what we eat? Yeah, so good. All right, what's your next one?
Okay, my next one is a little movie. A little film called Can't Hardly Wait.
Wow.
From
1998. Wow. This did not even come near my list.
Maybe it's because I loved it so much as a kid, but I remember when DVDs first came out.
Yes.
And audio commentaries were all the rage for like fat kid summers.
Yeah, sure.
I remember us watching the audio commentary and it being really funny, like almost funnier than the movie.
Because
it was all the writers talking about how originally it was supposed to be way raunchier, but the studio made them change a lot of stuff. Yeah. Like even like if you watch it, there's a part where like somebody's holding a balloon that's supposed to be a bong.
Yeah.
But anyway, every time I rewatch it, I'm like, this movie's funny. Yeah. It's just like a lovely throwback to the 90s.
But
it's got a great cast. Many of them went on to
now. Is it problematic?
Oh yeah, it's so canceled. All of these are problematic.
Because isn't Seth Green like just cultural appropriating? Isn't that his whole joke?
Yes, that is the entire joke.
And also, people, it falls into that Love Actually and camp of like how does he love this girl when he doesn't know her at all?
Yeah. Oh yeah, it's very problematic in many, many ways. But I love it, and I also just love the 90s of it all. Like my favorite joke is when she's like, he is like Ben and you are like Gwyneth, and then when she walks away, Jamie Presley's like, okay, she is not Gwyneth. It's just so 90s. I love it.
It's funny because I feel like that movie is itself like a 80s throwback.
It is
like the nerds trying to sneak in feels a lot like 16 Candles.
Yeah, so when they drink, like the nerd drinks the beer and he spits it out, he's like, nobody drink the beer, the beer has gone bad.
Yeah.
Or when he's like, you're gonna drink tonight, you could get drunk, and then the other kid goes, you could get addicted.
Well, I haven't watched this movie in so long.
It's got a lot of great lines.
Wow. All right. I have to check that out. I haven't watched movies.
Can't
so
hardly
long.
Wait. Again, highly problematic in 2021. Yeah. So, like, there's the exchange student. I want to touch. Would you like to touch my penis? All that stuff.
Yeah.
But it's fun.
Yeah. Okay. All right. My next one. This one is, I think, very funny, but also it's more, I don't know, it's a dramedy. It's 29th Street from 1991.
Ooh, okay.
This is based on a true story, based on the first person to win the New York Lotto jackpot. And his supposed life story of being blessed with luck, and his, you know, his whole life was lucky. You know, he goes out on a date with a girl, her brother stabs him. They find that there was a tumor where he stabbed him, and they found it in time. It's just like all that stuff. And his father's like this mush. His father's very unlucky, played by Danny Aiello. It's like a big Italian American movie.
Our dad loved it.
Yeah, yeah. It's really funny. Anthony LaPaglia is in it as the main character. He will come up again in this list.
Wow. You don't have So I Married an Axe Murderer, do you?
Yeah, you bet I do.
Oh, yes.
You bet I do. It's
wow, and Empire Records. Anthony LaPaglia is really in a lot of those iconic 90s.
He's not on. Is that on your list?
No, Empire? Because I don't think it's underrated.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, Anthony LaPaglia.
The patron saint of 90s movies.
He's doing an Italian, and I think he is an Italian, but he's doing an Italian voice that's like Gaga level.
Like Moonstruck. There's shades of Moonstruck in the Gucci movie.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, by the way, I just read the funniest tweet about Gucci. Who wrote the tweet?
Was it when she said she had an on-site psychiatric nurse?
Yes.
And then, what's his name? David Cross was like, I had that for the last Chipmunk movie.
No. It wasn't that. It was, is this a retweet? From Rax Reed Tacky. It was, I love how Gaga keeps doing all this press saying House of Gucci is the single most painful thing I've ever done. Up was down, black was white, men were made and broken in a single moment. And then you watch the movie and she's like, I'm making the pizza.
She will get an Oscar for that role.
You saw it?
No.
Oh, okay.
Not yet. I might be seeing it today, actually.
But Danny Aiello, Gucci. I love Danny Aiello.
So do I.
Danny Aiello is great.
He's the dad from the Papa Don't Preach video.
You bet. He's great in Do the Right Thing. Mm-hmm. You know,
Is he the dad in Saturday Night Fever or no?
No, he's not.
Okay.
He's great at being both sympathetic and sweet, but also intimidating and a little bit scary.
Yeah.
Danny Aiello. So go see 29th Street. It's a good Christmas movie because it wraps around Christmas, because I think Christmas is when, because they did it because it was the first New York State lotto.
It was legalized in New York.
Right, right. So he was the first jackpot winner.
Yes.
So it was on Christmas Eve, or at least in the movie on Christmas Eve, they like had a big ceremony for it and stuff, and like, so it begins on Christmas, and then he tells the story that it ends on Christmas. So it's a good Christmas movie too. It's very sweet. I think it's really a nice movie. It also has a little bit of that that Bronx Tale flavor, because there's
no Aiello in that.
No.
Why do I just think he's in every movie?
No, you're thinking of Little Italy.
What? Starring Hayden Christensen. Oh my God, I am thinking of that.
He's in that.
And Emma Roberts, right?
Yes. So yeah, 29th Street. What do you have next?
I have, okay, it's funny. I took a screenshot of the Rotten Tomatoes thing. And
I'm sorry. I forgot to say. Oh, wait, I don't have a 2019. Never mind.
Oh, I thought you were going to say that we haven't been recording this whole time, which has happened many times. I pulled it up and it's Dutch. And I was like, imagine if that was on my list. It's not, though.
Oh, Dutch. Dutch is that on that series I told you about of almost cult classics. Dutch is on there.
Well, Dutch, I'm looking at it now, has 17% rotten but 62% audience score.
Dutch, I figured out what Dutch is. It's a John Hughes movie, and it's two of his other movies combined. He took Trains, Planes, and Automobiles and combined it with Uncle Buck. And that's what Dutch is.
What I have here is a little joint called Overnight Delivery.
Oh, wow.
With Paul Rudd and Reese Witherspoon.
Overnight Delivery. God, I haven't thought of that movie in so long.
Of course you haven't, because it's truly underrated.
Paul Rudd, huh?
It's Paul Rudd.
Sexiest Man Alive.
Yes, Sexiest Man Alive, Paul Rudd, and with Reese Witherspoon, both of whom were relatively not that famous at the time.
Kevin Smith is somehow involved in this movie.
Yes, he did like a draft of the screenplay.
That's probably why I knew it. As a nerd kid.
You also will know it. I haven't been able to find anything to back this up, but I do believe it is the prototype for Road Trip. It's got like almost the same story.
Right, right, right.
So it's Paul Rudd thinks that his girlfriend's cheating on him. Then he sends her like a disgusting... He like meets this girl. She's kind of like a manic pixie dream girl.
Sure.
Reese Witherspoon plays. She's like, send her, break up with her. Like, send her a picture of me naked, me and you kissing, and like a used condom, and send it to her overnight delivery. And then he finds out that she wasn't cheating, and like they're on a road trip to try to stop the package from getting there. Right.
But of course they fall in love.
And then it turns out Christine Taylor, who plays his girlfriend, was cheating on him.
So it all
works out. It all works out.
I... this is one of those movies that is just like, I just see vague little shadows of impressions in my mind.
Yep.
Like, I don't remember
Of all the ones on my list, this is the one that I haven't, like, I haven't rewatched in a long time. So I think it's underrated because I remember it being really funny, but it could not be for all I remember.
Mm.
But I did watch it a couple of years ago. And I thought that it was pretty good.
Well, that's certainly more recent than I've watched it.
You know what it is, too? The performances are very good, even if the script isn't, because it's like two very good actors.
Yeah, I feel like that movie was barely released.
I think it was, like, released. Sarah Silverman's in it. God, I forgot about that. I think it was limited release or something. I think it was, like, shelved for a while. It was filmed on location in Minnesota in 1996, released direct-to-video in 1998.
1998 direct to video.
Yeah.
Was that a Miramax joint?
It was New Line Cinema.
New Line.
I wonder why it was held
why
up.
It was straight to video.
Joey Lauren Adams was considered for the role of Ivy and was going to skip out on her role in Chasing Amy, but she lost the part to Reese Witherspoon.
I guess it worked out for everybody.
Well, I guess so. Although Chasing Amy, God, talk about an overrated 90s movie. So that's mine.
Wow, okay. So I guess I've got two left. I guess we should talk about So I Married an Axe Murderer.
Great.
So this movie is 51% rotten on Rotten Tomatoes. And this is another one I struggled because I was like, is this a cult classic? But it isn't, because even young Mike Myers fans, they're like, ah, the Shrek. And it's like, they don't know it. Kids don't know this movie at all.
Right. And this is the Shrek voice came from.
Right, right. And he did the same. He's the one Scottish voice.
Right.
He did. There's an SNL skit where he does a Scottish voice. Yeah, this is So I Married an Axe Murderer, again, from 1993. What a year. It's interesting. This is a movie where you've got the wacky characters played by Mike Myers, but as the protagonist, he's basically just a normal guy.
Right.
It's not like Austin Powers where everything is wacky. There's some reality to hold on to in this movie, which I think works.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's like a comedy noir. Too.
Yeah.
It's not quite as dark to be described as like a black comedy, although I guess it is kind of a black comedy.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a dark comedy. I think that scene in 22 Jump Street.
Yeah.
Where Jonah Hill is doing like the spoken word poetry.
Yeah.
Is kind of inspired, or at least very similar to the work that Mike Myers does in this movie as the spoken word poet.
Right.
Jane, get me off of this crazy thing called love.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's good. It's got it's one of those movies that's like, it's got a real flavor.
Right.
Like Grumpy Old Men. Like really, it's good at like establishing an atmosphere.
San Francisco.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's this young guy who,
best friend is Anthony LaPaglia, a cop, a detective.
Course. Yes. And he, you know, like he can't find the right girl. Every time he dates a girl and all his friends and family love her, he breaks up with her for some stupid
reason.
It's
got a bit of that Seinfeld-y thing of like, you break up with somebody over something stupid.
Right, right. And then he finds and falls in love with this girl played by Nancy Travis.
Who is now unfortunately on that Tim Allen show.
Yes. And he loves her, but then he gets in his head that she is a black widow who has killed all her former husbands.
Which, because his mother reads The Inquirer and she calls it the paper.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Head, get your mother the paper.
No, I think it's Weekly World News.
Weekly World
News.
No
one calls Weekly World News the paper. And so it goes on. And so he loves her and he trusts her. But then on their wedding night, he's like afraid that she's going to kill him. It's really well done because you like her character, but you do kind of suspect her.
Yeah, especially she gets really sus after they get married.
Right. And ends up being her roommate,
sister.
Best friend.
Her sister.
Oh, it's her sister played by Amanda Plummer.
Rose, yeah.
Yeah. And she's just like, oh, men always try to take her away from me, so that's why I kill them.
Yeah.
Looking back, I don't know how you ever don't think that it's her.
I know.
She's so clearly the villain.
I love the what's the actress's name who plays Mike Myers' mother?
Oh, Brenda Fricker.
I love her, like, wanting to fuck Anthony LaPaglia.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's so fun.
Oh, I forgot about that.
And she's always like, whoo.
Oh, right. She, like, kisses him hello on the lips. Yeah. Oh, it's so funny.
He plays his own father.
Right. There are three standout scenes in this film. Scene number one is they go over the dinner to his parents' house, and Anthony LaPaglia is sitting next to the dad, who's played by Mike Myers, and they're making fun of Mike Myers' younger brother who's this kid with a big head, and he's like, "Hid, move now." I was too far. He'll be crying himself to sleep on his giant pillow tonight.
My favorite is, it's like the Sputnik, around yet pointy at parts.
That's all. He also says, they will both believe in conspiracy theories, because he's like, "Oh, how do you hate Colonel Sanders?" He's like, "Because he puts an addictive chemical that makes you crave it fortnightly, smartass."
What about if you want my body?
All right,
we gotta pipe her down.
Yeah.
There's some great lines in it.
The other big scene for me is they go on a tour of...
The Rock. What's it called? That prison in San Francisco. I've been there.
It's funny that we can only think of it as The Rock.
Because that's what they call it.
Right. Alcatraz. And the late great...
What's his name?
The late great Phil Hartman. Phil Hartman plays Vicky, the guy who's giving the tour, and he like gets super intense, and he's like, and then he gouged the bitch's eyes out,
and then he's like known as around the cell block as the bitch.
Yeah.
and then he pissed in the bitch's ocular cavity.
And at one point, Mike Myers is trying to talk to Ali Pauly, and Ali Pauly is like, "Shh, no. And then they look, and Phil Hartman's staring at them because they talk.
Vicky.
He's like, "Oh, I love Vicky. He's the best." And then the third great standout moment is a cameo from Charles Grodin, where at the end, Anthony LaPaglia needs to get to save Mike Myers, and he tries to commandeer Charles Grodin's vehicle, and he's like, "You can't commandeer my vehicle. I know for a fact you can't commandeer my vehicle." And he's like, "Please, can I commandeer your vehicle?"
Wow, what early shades of Get Out.
Yeah,
with the best friend trying to come save him.
Yeah, it's a damn good movie.
It is good. It is really good.
It's one of his best. I think like that. Austin Powers 1.
Oh my god, Austin Powers 1 is so funny. It's almost obnoxious because it had such an annoying cultural impact that everybody did an Austin Powers impression.
Right,
but if you go back and watch it, the first one really is so funny.
Yeah, it's really funny. Even the second one's okay.
My favorite is the Swedish penis enlarger.
Yeah.
One signed copy of Swedish penis enlargers. That is my bag, baby. Signed by Austin Danger Power.
Yeah, it's good. It's good. He's good. I also think he's a good actor. Like when he's in other things, he's good.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like the Shrek movies. That's well documented.
Yeah. And that Shrek voice is that voice.
Right. You know, first they did it.
It was Chris Farley originally. Right,
but they didn't finish that.
Right.
Then they did it all with him just doing a Mike Myers voice, and it wasn't working. And then, like, he, like, went to the studio and was like, "Please let me do it again. Let me do something different." And I think he, like, they took money out of his own salary. And then he did it with so he did it twice, and then he did it with the Scottish accent.
That's interesting. I didn't know that.
It worked better, I guess.
Okay.
So
you have one more?
I have...
Because I have my honorable mention and then my top.
Me too. I have two honorable mentions in the top.
I'm going to do my honorable mention because it's not really from the 90s.
Sure.
It's The Sweetest Thing from 2002.
I don't remember this movie.
Of course you don't, but it's a great film.
What is this about? Who is this?
Cameron Diaz, Christina Applegate.
What happens in this movie?
It is, they are all living again in San Francisco.
It's of course.
Three gal pals. And Selma Blair is the third woman.
Okay.
And they're like three friends, and they are, you know, all of them are single. And then she meets one night at a club. Cameron Diaz meets Thomas Jane.
Yes.
And then they like, don't,
I may have never seen this movie.
They
ever. Don't,
they connect, but they never like hook up. And then she can't stop thinking about
named
him.
After
they,
the U2 song.
Named after the U2 song. And they go like on a trip to find him. And it turns out he's getting married. It's fun. And it's like, one of the first that I can remember, at least, female-driven gross-out comedies.
Oh, yeah.
Because there's a lot of, like, gross stuff in it. At one point, right. Selma Blair is, like, looking into a... like, they're in a rest stop, and she... Or is it Selma Blair? Or is it Christina Applegate? One of them is, like, looking into a glory hole and then gets poked in the eye with a dick.
That's fun.
It's fun. It's a good movie.
Remember when we had movies that weren't Marvel movies?
Yeah, God, remember that?
Now, like, your small romantic comedies... are just straight to Netflix.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yes, I was just going to say
that would have been a movie in theaters. Like,
yeah. It's sad. God, how sad.
Do you want to give your final or do you want to wait? I'm I wonder if one of my honorable mentions is your final.
Well, then do your honorable mentions first.
But I'm a cheerleader?
No, because I do think that that's a true cult classic.
Well, it's an honorable mention.
It's great.
By the way, it's got 41% on Rotten Tomatoes.
That's interesting, because I always thought that was a critical darling that just never made any money.
No.
Michelle Williams is in that movie. Can we talk about that?
Can we talk about RuPaul, like one of the first times you saw him outside of drag?
Yeah.
Like now you're very used to seeing him outside of drag.
Yeah.
But at this point, it was rare. Like, I remember people being like, you know who that is? That's RuPaul. And people were like, what?
I love
all
the stuff.
And of course, he's playing you could say he, right? Is RuPaul he?
I believe RuPaul is a he who identifies as a man but does drag.
Does drag, okay. Yeah. So he plays
Did you ever see that moment conversion. Where Jimmy Fallon says drag queen and RuPaul goes, drag queen?
Oh, and he thinks life is over?
He's about to get canceled. You see Jimmy Fallon's face you see his heart fall out of his asshole.
Yeah. Yeah, he's like, oh my God, this is I just ended my career right here. if you don't know, it's Michelle, no, who is it?
It's Natasha Lyonne.
Natasha Lyonne is the main girl. She's a cheerleader, she's got a football player boyfriend, but she's gay. Yeah. they send her to the conversion camp, which is a nightmare in real life, but hilarious in this
so
movie.
So funny.
And of course, one of the conversion camp people is RuPaul.
Mm-hmm.
Kathy Moriarty.
Kathy Moriarty is so good. And then there's like her ridiculously hot son that all the gay boys like lust after.
Yeah, it's
ridiculous.
And
then it turns out he is gay.
Right.
And he went through the camp.
It's super over the top.
Well, I was
colorful,
gonna say,
satirical.
I feel like a lot of people in our age bracket, I guess we're millennials. I feel like a lot of millennials, I feel like I've had a conversation about this movie where like millennials say like it's the first time I was ever introduced to camp. Cheerleader because it's got
campy.
That weird quality that camp has and that when you're young you don't know what to make of it at first and then you're like, but I think this is supposed to be fun.
It's super broad strokes.
It's and a lot of good performances. One of the boys is Rufio from Hook.
Yes You know, it's funny that you just say camp. You made me think of one that's not on my list.
What?
Which is Serial Mom.
Oh my God! How did I forget
that John Waters movie?
That is such a good movie.
That's another really campy
movie. Oh my God!
Talk
about campy but like at the time, I feel like people didn't get that it was campy.
Oh yeah, I think the movie was
ripped apart.
Yeah.
What about the end when she kills the woman for wearing white after Labor Day, played by Patty Hearst?
Yeah,
you can't wear white after Labor Day, but fashion has changed.
That's not true anymore.
No, it hasn't. Oh my God, it's so good.
Yeah, that's another one. My other honorable mention, and this is one that was on and off my list because I do think it's a cult classic. From 1996, Cable Guy, directed by Ben Stiller.
A lot of people really hate that movie.
It's got 54% rotten.
Which means critics were split.
And at the time, people hated it. I think people have come around to liking it now.
Well, people were expecting it to be like a funny Jim Carrey
movie. Do you realize, in 1994, Ace Ventura, The Mask, and Dumb and Dumber all came out in 1 year?
Yes. Yes. And then all three of them had Saturday morning cartoons.
So that's his 1994. Then in 1995, you've got Ace Ventura 2 and Batman and Robin. And then in 1996, this. Mm. And it's not the movie anybody wanted
it to
be.
It's dark. It's very dark.
Right. And he's the villain. Yeah. And he's playing very creepy in it. It's really a good dark comedy.
I think I wouldn't be surprised if that movie was originally written to be a thriller and then they later made it a dark comedy.
Well, no, I think it was a dark comedy always because it was written by Judd Apatow.
Okay. And his wife is in it.
Yes, Leslie Mann. I think that's how he met his wife.
Okay. Well, she's also in Big Daddy.
Yes. She's in a lot of things.
Yeah.
This one maybe is a cult classic, but it's good. It's actually
Well, he's
good.
An interesting character because he was raised by TV.
Right. It has a real 90s moral.
Yeah,
to it.
Yeah.
Like, there's also a background story that's based on
The Menendez brothers,
but it's two brothers played by Ben Stiller. And, like, everyone's glued to the TV because the trial's going on. So it's trying to say something about TV addiction.
Well, because it was in that 90s era of, like, the OJ trial took the media by storm.
Right, and that idea of, like, media is killing us.
Right, which got picked up in Scream 2, where it was like, it's all about the trial, baby, which dated now.
Yeah, I know. There hasn't been
because people don't watch, like, even the Kyle Rittenhouse trial, which is arguably the biggest trial of recent, or Derek Chauvin, nobody was watching the trial every day. They were just reading the highlights.
Right, do they film them anymore?
I don't think they filmed them the way they used to. Well, I don't know. No, that's not true. I think they do, but it's just on C-SPAN or something.
I know. Okay.
Because I know people who watched the whole Kyle Rittenhouse trial.
Okay. Yeah, but OJ was like, it went on for so long and was every day. It was like a soap opera.
Well, I remember specifically thinking like, wow, this is going on for so long and it's so many people paying attention to it. There was a show on at like 4 o'clock every day that was called OJ Today. And it was literally like a recap. The whole thing was just a recap of what's been going on.
Wow. So that's my honorable mention.
Okay.
What's your number one?
My number one is from the year 1999, an ensemble comedy, 200 Cigarettes.
Okay. Okay.
Okay. I love this movie.
You know what? I may...
Tell me you've never seen it.
I feel like I have, but maybe not all of it.
So it takes place on New Year's Eve of 1981. So it's interesting because...
Is it Chappelle in this movie?
Yes. He's the cab driver.
Yes.
It's funny because it's my number one underrated 90s comedy, but it's got an 80s aesthetic. It takes place in 1981. Yeah. It is... This cast is stacked. It's both Affleck brothers.
Whoa.
Dave Chappelle. God, everyone I'm listing is problematic.
Everybody. Mel Gibson. Harvey Weinstein. Bill Cosby.
Courtney Love. Jay Moore. Martha Plimpton, Christina Ricci, Paul Rudd.
Of course, Paul Rudd.
Who else? Hold on, there's more. Elvis Costello shows up as himself. Janine Garofalo, Gabby Hoffman, Kate Hudson.
It's a little like Nick and Nora's Infinite Playlist.
It's Nicole Ari Parker from the new Sex and the City was in it, one of her first roles.
Okay, yeah.
Martha Plimpton, I already said. Yeah, so it's a bunch of intertwining stories in New York City on New Year's Eve. It all takes place in one night. And it's just fun because none of the characters know each other and then they cross paths. Christina Ricci and Gabby Hoffman are like two like bridge and tunnel girls from Long Island thick accents they're all going to the same party in the city that's being thrown by Martha Plimpton. And the big joke is like nobody shows up to the party because they're all doing these other things. And then Martha Plimpton drinks herself to sleep. Yeah. And then when she wakes up, she finds out it was like the wildest party. But the party is totally off camera. You never see the party. Then at the end, Dave Chappelle goes through all the Polaroids of the party and narrates what happened.
At
one point, like Martha Plimpton has sex with Elvis Costello. I just think it's so funny and there's great performances and it's just like so fun.
I feel like this was a thing in the 90s, early 2000s of like movies with like, Can't Hardly Wait is like this. Like there's a ton of people in it and everyone kind of has their own story.
Yes.
And it all is kind of revolving around one thing. End. Yeah.
Yeah. It ends with the extent. I mean, Dave Chappelle is, we don't like Dave Chappelle anymore, but Dave Chappelle was really good in it. It's really funny. It's just, I love this movie. It's one of those movies that whenever it's on, I'm like, oh my God, it's on. I got to watch it.
Directed by Riser Braman Garcia.
Yeah, what I don't know who that is.
He do? Oh, he was a cinematographer.
It has, so it was panned. It got negative reviews, 30% on Rotten Tomato. Variety magazine called it dismally unfunny.
Ooh.
But then I feel like I know a lot of people who like it.
Yeah.
Reviews are really, they have an expiration date.
This director directed Gilmore Girls A Year in the Life.
Yikes. it's just one of those movies. I really like it a lot. And I think it's super
underrated.
It's
one you don't hear about anymore. Really.
You never, nobody ever talks about it. It's New Year's Eve. I love a movie around the holiday. Janine Garofalo is just always great. I love Janine Garofalo. I considered putting The Truth About Cats and Dogs on this list because I also really love that movie.
Boy, that's such a 90s movie.
That's like it's supposed to be like a modern take on Cyrano de Bergerac.
Yeah.
So anyway, 200 Cigarettes, I love it.
Fantastic.
And everybody's smoking in every scene of this movie.
Of course. All right, well, we come to my number one. Mystery Science Theater 3000, the movie.
Oh, wow.
From 1996. This is based on the TV show Mystery Science Theater 3000. If you're not familiar with it, it's a show where they would just get old movies, public domain movies or cheap movies, and then they would talk over it and tell jokes and riff jokes. Mm-hmm. It's sort of the beginning of that thing. And the wraparound story of the TV show and the movie was that it was an evil corporation. They sent someone to space and like as an experiment or like showing him terrible movies to torture him to see how he'll be. And it was popular and to make a movie out of it like is dumb. Like the fact that this movie ever happened is crazy. So of course it was not a success because it's a movie that's really another movie. In the movie they watch is This Island Earth from 1955.
Okay.
But it's really, really, it's It's got more jokes per minute than a typical episode of Mystery Science Theater. And it's just really, I think it really works as that. I mean, does it work as its own movie? No, because it's not, the wraparounds look a little bit better,
mm-hmm.
but it's still, they don't go against the premise. It's them watching a movie and making fun of it. I love it. I'm a big fan of it. Actually, oh, wow. What do you think it has on Rotten Tomatoes?
I wouldn't be surprised if it's weirdly high.
80%.
Look at that. See?
But remember, Rotten Tomatoes, the score is never, it's never done. Old movies change all the time. So this could be an amalgam of new reviews. 80%. Wow. That's so surprising to me because it was a big failure. Although it didn't cost a lot. Yeah. There's not much I could say about it because it's This Island Earth, but it's just, it's very funny.
Am I crazy or did they do Titanic when it first came out? Like, or around when it first came out?
Some of the people, because the history of it's weird because they split up and then some people went one way and some people went another way. So some of them did do Titanic, I think. I don't know where it was shown.
I feel like it was like around when it first came out, too.
It was when it first came out on video.
And it was like, oh, because Titanic was having had such a moment that it was like, they're going to do Titanic.
Yeah, no, they definitely did it. They definitely did it.
So two other movies that I considered putting on the list, but I didn't. But now I'm just going to say.
Sure.
Now that we're here. Kids in the Hall, Brain Candy.
How did I not think of that one?
Because I think these I didn't include on my list because ultimately I haven't seen them in years. So I can't vouch that they're still good.
Right.
But I remember thinking that they were good.
I remember. Yeah, it's true.
And
the
other one is just because it's interesting. Stuart Saves His Family.
I almost put Stuart Saves His Family on. But similarly, I don't remember if it was really good.
I just think it's interesting that they chose to make it like a, it started off funny, but then it becomes like a heavy family drama based on this light SNL skit.
Yeah.
But anyways, that's underrated 90s comedies.
Well, we did it. Go check out all of those films.
Yes.
Be aware that they will be problematic.
For sure.
So you might be triggered.
Trigger warning.
Anthony, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
You can find PCMC anywhere podcasts are found. We end our episode by saying
go bye-bye.